Well, Slava Isusa Christu, glory be to Jesus Christ and glory be to our Creator. I greet you all on Treaty 6 territory in the homeland of the Métis with the first public meeting of the board of the next 4 years. So welcome to our new trustees, so Hudson Biblow and Benita Elliott and Dan Case. Thank you for putting your names forward and being part of this great board that's going to do great things for Catholic education here in Saskatoon. And to exec council, we're back. All right, Trustee Beckler is going to lead us in the opening prayer.
Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. Heavenly Father, we come to you this hour asking for your blessing and help as we are guided. We pray for guidance in the matters at hand and ask that you will clearly show us how to conduct our work with the spirit of joy and enthusiasm. Give us the desire to find ways to excel in our work. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Trustee Beckler. Trustees, you had the opportunity to look through your board package and you saw the agenda that was presented, and I'll ask for someone to adopt that. Thank you, Trustee Carrier. I'll need a seconder for that motion. Trustee Zakreski, Rebecca. I will ask, since we do have some people on the Teams call, so I'll ask for a negative vote. Hearing none, that motion is carried. You'll see 1.4, trustees, a declaration of conflict of interest. If there is anyone who feels through this public portion of the meeting that there is something that they need to recuse themselves from, could I ask for you to do so and declare? Seeing none, we'll continue. Trustees, you have the opportunity to look through the minutes of the October 19th regular meeting of the Board of Education. If there are no errors or omissions, I'll ask for an approval. Thank you, Trustee Beckler. Trustee Biblow is seconding that motion. I'll ask for any negative votes. That motion is carried. No delegations or special presentations or post-meeting assignments or consent items. We'll proceed right to 6.1, which is the 2019-2020 audited financial statements. And we'll ask CFO Lloyd and Manager of Financial Services, Kate Holmes, to lead us in that conversation.
Chair Boyko. Just a point on the approval of the minutes. I think we may need to revisit that, as Trustee Biblow was not at that meeting. He wasn't elected yet.
Ah, okay.
So we have Trustee Beckler, and then we would need a seconder that would have at the meeting.
Thank
you.
So
move Diane. Deb?
Thank you, Debbie. Trustee Carrier,
Trustee
Beckler,
Trustee
Biblow, and I will ask then, we're revisiting, I'll ask if there's any negative votes. Hearing none, that motion is carried. Thank you, Mr. Basilak, for catching that. All right, Joel, I'll turn it over to you.
All right, thank you, Chair Boyko. It's my pleasure today to present the audit financial statements along with Catherine Holmes to the board today. Definitely a very interesting year last year it was in many fronts, and especially on the financial side of things. So overall, the statements that are presented today did receive a clean audit opinion as identified in the report. And I will now turn over to Catherine Holmes to go through some of the detail and the main points of the financial statements. Okay.
Thanks, Joel, for the introduction. As Joel mentioned, we did receive an unmodified audit opinion from our auditors, Myers Norris Penny. The financial statements are presented with standards we follow, their accounting board standards, and those standards are approved and recommended through the Ministry of Education, and our statements are consolidated with the provincial statements as well. This year we had a surplus of $9.3 million. And in combination with this, our unrestricted surplus did not change. The key theme this year was COVID and pandemic school closures. So I just want to point out kind of a few key differences from prior year financials. And almost all of them were as a result of the pandemic this year. The first area that we ended up in a large surplus was property tax, or was for operating grant. And that was about $6.6 million in just operating grant. And that was due to primarily due to June changing the property tax due date. The due date is normally June 30th for people to pay their property taxes. This year, that was extended to September 30th. So this resulted in a cash flow difference for us. And anytime there's a cash flow shortage from what the ministry projects we're supposed to get each month, that difference will be made up in additional operating grants. So we are not short cash flow. So to follow proper accounting standards, we also had to recognize the full amount of property tax that we earned during the year. So this resulted in a $6.6 million contribution to our surplus that we have restricted and we've already kind of seen this coming through. For example, in October, we had a large property tax collection due to the September 30th deadline, and that resulted in less operating grant than we would have predicted. So we are going to show a shortage of grant revenue in our 2021 financial statements. Another key difference due to the pandemic was some savings that we realized in the instructional expense area. Greg, if you just want to scroll down a tiny bit there. And in fact, so instruction, we ended up saving about $1.7 million in sub-salaries. And we also had significant savings in coordinator and school budgets. And those have been restricted for use in future years. That's good, Greg, right there. Transportation was another area where we realized significant savings due to the pandemic. We ended up paying the contractor at less of a rate than we had anticipated, just due to those buses not running. And prior to the pandemic, we had also had some routes that we had budgeted and had not filled. And we were also able to develop some other efficiencies in the transportation area. One of the changes, kind of significant from usual, was in PMR. Normally in a year, we would take in, $3.8 or so million dollars in PMR grant, and we will expend significantly all of that during the year. But in this year, we underspent our PMR allocation, and the reason that we're doing that is to build up that PMR balance so we can take on that large project at Father Rob that you guys have already heard quite a bit about. So is there any questions?
Trustees, is there anything of Kate or Joel at this time? Jim?
Yeah, it just dawned on me that when we give our annual report, are we going to see clearly, whatever that number is, a $9 million surplus articulated or wrote? My point is, we talked about this in previous years, that when people see a surplus, they conjure up lots of thoughts.
Yeah, and that is kind of an issue with that, with the annual report, in that financial schedule that's presented in the annual report. It does just indicate that $9.3 million surplus. It does not show that we have committed some of those funds for the next school year. For example, that $6.6 million. That report also does not show that we receive about $5 million in capital grants for modular classroom projects that were also capitalized. So it is a bit misleading way if people were not to go to that accumulated surplus note that is included in the financial statements to see how that surplus was actually distributed.
I guess just to add on a couple of comments to Catherine's good points. So the annual report is the main report body, but then attached to it is the full financial statements. Not everyone makes it their way through the entire document, and we recognize that. So what we try to do is through like a public report of this, we reference that our accumulated surplus does not change year over year. It's staying the same. And it is very difficult with capital assets because we've posted $30 million surpluses in the past, and we've posted $15 million deficits in the past because of that capital grant and buildings and those kinds of things. So we try to make it as clear as we can through more like media releases that we will issue, public board reports that we reference more of a cash position. When we look at our financial statement, that's both cash and non-cash. And the non-cash items really skews a lot of the numbers because you're setting up buildings, for example, that you didn't actually have to pay for. You received provincial grant for, and you take on that building that's worth $30 million and bring it into an asset, and it does contribute to a surplus that year. This taxation number is another good example. From a cash position, we received really 100% of our funding in the year. But from an accounting perspective, we received 100% of our cash, and we had to set up a receivable for $6 million for taxation that we're going to get this year. And then when it comes to this year, we get that tax dollars, but then we lose grant dollars. So from a cash position, it's really easy to see, and it end up being in a balanced position. But when you're doing book entries, it makes it a little bit more complicated. So we try to do that through other means, like accumulated surplus notes. We're not required to set up restrictions like the way we do and provide explanations for those, and we do that additional information to the reader and to the board and even to management so we know why funds are directed into certain purposes. So we try to really do a lot of that clarification in that accumulated surplus note by restricting those funds, because ultimately if we didn't restrict the taxation one, for example, we would have actually showed a larger surplus than overall from a cash position if we would have left it that way. So both Kit and I recognize it's very difficult to know exactly how we ended the year based on a financial statement, but we'll try to do that in other means, like more like a media release or a written statement. Our accumulated surplus, because of those restrictions that we talked about earlier, did not change year over year. It stayed the same. Hope that helped.
Thanks, Joel.
So to carry on with Jim's point, so the annual report has a structure that all its divisions across the province need to follow. So the one thing that they don't have any control over is the initial letters that we have. So is there an opportunity maybe to put some of this explanation, say, in the chair's letter, that's part of that report, just to maybe highlight a few of these kind of things that, at case in point, when you spoke to the fact that maybe they don't even get to the end of the report, never mind to the financial statement report. So maybe we could, while their interest is still there, maybe that's someplace that we could also add some clarification. Maybe.
No, very good point. We do try to do that like in the letters in the budget document that we have. We try to explain as much as we can multiple times, because when we budget a similar format to this, we'll budget $7 million deficits. But when you work through from a cash position, we're balanced. But from an accounting perspective, they would show a deficit or a surplus based on what the year is. So we try to do some of that work in the budget time, because that's sometimes we'll get some inquiries there. For at year end, we don't really have that latitude. The annual report is structured, and the financial statement is structured by the ministry. So we're really handcuffed in what we're able to add. But we can look and see if there's a way we can add another piece in there. Just financial statement-wise, not really into the notes, which is at the back of the statement. So I'm not sure, Kate, if you have any suggestions on where a note like that can be added earlier on or not?
Not off the top of my head. But, yeah, I think that's a good idea, Diane, to perhaps highlight something like that earlier in the report. And Joel and I could work with whoever on, you know, seeing to where that would fit in possibly.
Yeah, that might, I think the letter is really our only, our main area, and we could begin to put a paragraph in there and just make a comment within that, whatever. Mm-hmm. There. Patty would be the best to work through that. She helps to add, sorry.
Okay, any other questions, trustees, or comments? Again, Joel and Kate, thank you. We appreciate everything that you do to get us to this point. So you see, trustees, the recommendation that subject to ministry approval, the Board of Education approves the audited financial statements for the fiscal year ending August 31st, 2020, as presented. I'll need someone to move that motion. Trustee Beckler, someone to second that motion. Is that you, Trustee Jelinski?
Yes, it is.
Thank you for putting up your hand there. I'll ask for a negative vote. Seeing and hearing none, that motion is carried. All right, let's proceed now to 6.2 in the annual reports to the ministry, Director Shep and Executive Council.
Great. Thank you very much. Attached to your package that went out for folks, and as well will be on the website soon, is our annual report for the 2020 academic year. Again, this does follow a very similar format to past years and provides a synopsis of board performance, both in financial and educational realms, as well as many other pieces of information. That document is available and will be available online as per past processes. And we're just bringing it forward now along with our financial report, our audited financials, now that those are complete, for approval of the board. Once that is done, the next stage in the process would be to meld the documents together, get that all together, and put submit it to the Ministry of Education, who will then table that with government, and then we would also then post that on our website for public consumption, and then get that out to our Catholic school community councils and other community members.
Thank you, Director Shetland. Any questions or comments at this point, trustees?
Diane, Tim here.
Yes, Tim.
Just again, I compliment administration. It's an excellent report. As always, it highlights, you know, the positive things going on in our school division. And again, it's just one of those, again, another item that makes us so proud of GSCS. I would invite all trustees, in particular the new trustees, to consider taking part of the annual report out when they go to Catholic School Community Council meetings, just to highlight some of those graphs where, you know, our reading level at grade three, for example, or graduation rates, or on-time graduation. Those things, the public, I mean, it's a public document, but it's good to highlight that too when we meet with our community school council. So I would invite trustees to consider that. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim, for that suggestion. That's a very good one. All right, trustees, I'm not seeing any other comments or questions. So the recommendation that the Board of Education review and approve as presented the GSCS Schools 2019-2020 annual report, pending minor changes made after format review, and approval is received from the Ministry of Education and Finance. I'll need someone to move that motion.
Wayne.
Thank you, Wayne. I'll need someone to second that motion. Trustee Carrier, all those opposed to the motion? That motion is carried. And again, thank you for the good reporting. Trustees, let's proceed now to 6.3. That's the 2020-2021 student enrollment report. And Superintendent Rivard will lead us in that discussion.
Thanks so much, Chair Boyko. You will see before you in your packages the end of September enrollment data, although this is the third enrollment update this year due to the pandemic and the cause of enrollment fluctuations. This is speaking specifically to end of September data for us. As you can see in the report, we are serving 143 fewer students from kindergarten to grade 12 year over year. And as a side note, we have discussed previously that our sister board of the Susten Public School Division is reporting a decrease of 440 students from kindergarten to grade 12 year over year. What we have noticed with the impact of the pandemic, there are some specific themes that have had an impact on our enrollment. And of course, pre-kindergarten enrollment is listed there as down to 252 from 395 from last year. And our kindergarten enrollment as well has had a significant drop from the previous year by 177 students. What's interesting as well is that our four-year-old health numbers from the previous year compared to this year are about 100 fewer. So we would have expected to see more kindergarten students year over year than we did, not a drop. And so, again, we can attribute that to families choosing to keep the younger kids at home at this point. And this would be something that is mirrored in our sister board as well, in the health numbers that they're capturing as well. We usually capture about 40% statistically year over year, some years a bit more, some years a bit less than that. And then the last point that is of significance for us would be that migration patterns have definitely changed due to COVID, and we've seen 203 fewer students register in our welcoming center year over year from the same time period previously. In digging into the data, we've seen that only about 74 students that we would have expected to see in our schools have opted for an online schooling other than what we were providing here at GSCS. So there hasn't been a significant move from one school division to another, was we were looking into as well. We divided in the report for our Saskatoon City Schools, and you'll see the enrollment there as well as the comparative to year over year for our elementary schools, our high schools, our homeschoolers, and our students who are 22 years and older. And you can see that the significant drop is in that elementary K to 8 level, which I've spoken to already. Underneath that, I've added in the Greater Saskatoon Area Schools, and we have seen an increase in those areas. So there's 1,442 students in our surrounding communities, and it's a growth of 54 students overall year over year, mostly in the Martinsville and especially Warman schools in those two cities. And then Humboldt Collegiate, of course, is 369 students, and we do not count those currently. We do not count those in our enrollment as well. A summary after that is the French immersion English as additional language Cree-Ling bilingual program and Ukrainian bilingual programs, and you see the year over year change in there. And just to give you some perspective, I know we've seen these numbers before, but just as a reminder that our language programs are very strong in the school division due to the great support from the board. And we've seen a little bit more growth in our French than in our counterpart at the public school division. And as well, our Cree bilingual program has significantly more students than our counterparts. There has been a drop in students in the Cree bilingual program, however, not nearly as significant as what is reported by our partners next door as well. Again, just a reiteration that our additional language students number has decreased. That does not mean that we have seen an overall, we've seen an overall decrease in newcomers. We're still, some of those students have graduated out of the supports that are being provided as well. Not on this not on this report, but just a reminder that we are also serving about 12% of our population in online, which is new to us this year. And that would be exactly mirrored as what is taking place in our sister board here in the city. And so in September, the numbers were about 1,300 elementary students online, and at the high school level, about 1,200 of those students would be online as well. And so I would invite any questions at this point on the enrollment report for September.
Thank you, Superintendent Rivard. Trustees, any comments at this point? All right, seeing none. It is interesting to see how, I'm not sure if this has been a surprise to anyone, any of these facts and figures that are going forward, but we thank Francois and all of your team for the good reporting in this capacity. So trustees, the recommendation that the Board of Education approve the information as presented in the 2020-2021 Student Enrollment Report. I'll require someone to move that motion.
So moved, Diane.
Thank you, Deb. I'll need a seconder for that motion. Thank you, Trustee Beckler. All those against that motion? That motion is carried. All right, let's proceed now to 6.4, Improving Student Learning and Achievement Monitoring Report, the Early Years, Reading, Writing, and Arithmetic. We used to say, I guess, Reading, Writing, and Math at grade level. So we will have our Superintendent Janice Van Gool begin that report.
Thank you.
Hey, Denise, you may be muted.
Okay, is that better?
Yes.
Yeah, you bet.
Okay, I'm going to hang up my phone. I'm hearing it double. Just 1 second. Okay. Okay, can you see my screen?
Yes, you bet.
Okay, what is it showing you?
Actually, it just went away right now.
Okay, now can you see it?
Yes, that's better, yeah.
I'm going to start from the beginning. There we go.
Yeah, looks good.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. I'm just going to go quickly in the interest of time. I'm going to speak briefly to the slides that we've included here. The provincial early learning outcome states that by June, 90% of students exiting kindergarten will be ready for learning in the primary grades. And although many students achieve this goal by the end of kindergarten, we recognize that in some of our schools, extra effort and support was needed. And so in response to this, and considering the Truth and Reconciliation Call to Action number 12, we shifted our plan to add a focus on relationships of care and connectedness with both First Nation students and with families of all of our students. We used the gifts of our First Nations and Métis team and those of the knowledge keepers to plan for our people. The word Nagate Mitawin means the act of caring for one another. Right here. An effective teacher gets to know her students, their world, their culture, and their family, care of them. She helps her students learn in their way, and the child, the OASIS, helps the teacher teach as best she can, and it becomes a relationship of care and connectedness with and between teachers, students, and families. We also know the very importance of language and cognitive development in relation to grade one, into relation to grade three reading levels. And so we also focused on developing early and emergent literacy skills within the kindergarten program. Engaging families, creating culturally affirming invitations, introducing and developing literacy practices, and providing staff and administrators professional learning on responsive teaching practices and pedagogy have been our focus this year. And this just shows some of our PD activities. We also hosted a provincial early learning symposium with over 250 participants throughout the province, at which time Elder Scott shared the turtle teaching with all of us. It reminds us of the many lessons one can learn by observing how the turtle responds to its environment and to its young. It also reminds us of the need to adapt to the environment, a lesson which we've all had to practice this year. If you note here, we surveyed our administrators from the provincial symposium. An idea was sparked that perhaps in Greater Saskatoon Catholic schools, we should have our own symposium. So we surveyed our administrators and learned that many of them weren't confident in understanding of early learning. And so part of our work was preparing documents, PD, and planning for a symposium this year. And of course, due to the pandemic, we had to have alternate. Just pause for this. One of the many teachings that Elder Scott shared. Teaches us about the heart, about acceptance, and about understanding. Throughout the symposium and throughout the academic year, we focused on the importance of responding to the data, working with both admin and teachers on preparing and implementing responsive teaching practices in kindergarten. Our team met with school teams to review classroom data and to develop intervention plans for 100% of our students that were presenting in the yellow and the red. And this just talks to the emergent literacy practices and strategies that we use within the classroom to build capacity for our students and to build those emerging skills and get them ready for learning in the primary end.
And of course, we were unable to complete the EYE data in the spring due to the pandemic. Let's see, there's a big also, one of the things that we're excited about is the early learning intensive pilot program. This year, we welcomed 29 students with intensive needs into our pre-K programs. And it, again, this is just a celebration of the diversity and inclusion within Greater Saskatoon Catholic School. We sat on the advisory group and participated on multiple task force teams to successfully open Saskatoon's first family resource center, which is now open despite the pandemic with caution and serving families. And it really is to focus on those families, those 0 to 6, in which schools don't have a lot of control, but we want to make sure that we're providing a support system for those families prior to entering schools. We're very actively engaged, and in fact, the Resource Center is supporting many of our pre-K programs in the Southwest sector. And just a little bit more information on that. Some of the additional professional development that we have focused on. And I'll let you read that at your leisure. And then finally, with the blessing of the Board of Trustees, this fall, we were able to provide targeted full day K in several of our community schools, including the new Midshift program, working with our FNM team as well. And finally, more than ever in early learning and in every essence this year, we will continue to focus on Nagate Mitawin, the act of caring for one another. So I'll pause if there's any questions. There are some additional slides, but those are just for our reference. And if not, that was my quick overview of our work within early learning this year.
All right. Thank you, Denise. Lots of good things that are going on. And it always validates, you know, the attention that we pay to sort of the external sources, the professional development that continues to happen to ensure that we're doing the best way things possible. So thank you so much for your looking at this component. So now do we proceed with Terry?
Yes, we can. Yep, there she is.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's so good to see you. It is my absolute pleasure, and thank you, Chair Boyko, to talk about reading, writing, and math. What's dear to my heart, the three R's, as you said, Chair Boyko. So I'm just going to share my screen. I've got a point here, hoping it's going to work. Okay, you should be able to see my screen now. Awesome. Okay, so taking a look at what we're going to go over today, I just want to begin by saying that much of what you're going to see today in terms of reading, writing, and math assessment data is not new to those on the board from last year. As you know, there's many things that we say due to COVID and due to COVID, we were not able to complete the assessments that we typically would have in June 2020. So therefore, much of this is going to be a review. I'm going to go through all three areas and briefly look at the June 2019 data, which would have been quite some time ago and has already been reported on, but also share with you the Canadian Achievement Test data that was collected, and that comes to us in December each year. So that would have been after our monitoring report last year. For those new to the board, we're looking forward to sharing with you the strategies that we utilize within each of our schools and within our division to support school communities in these areas. So when it comes to learning in our division, as you know, our anchor is the student learning model that you see here on the left-hand side of the slide, and it provides our models provide us with support in responding to our student needs in a very systematic approach and gives us common language within the division no matter what school you go to. Area focus teams also use this particular resource collaboratively to develop strategies and supports for both teacher and student. So specifically what we'll be talking about today is the work that the Reading, Writing, and Mathematics Area Focus Team does, and that includes a broad-based committee. That includes myself, Superintendent Shercliffe, Consultant Smallchild from our First Nations Métis Education Team, Consultant Martins from our English as an Additional Language Team, Coordinators Willie and McQuillan from both our ELA and English Language Arts and Mathematics team, as well as two principals from our division and two vice principals. This team meets four times a year, and we review student data. We look at feedback from our teachers and our administrators. We look at current research in order to support our team's goals and strategies each year. And the wall that you see there on the right-hand side is a visibility wall that we use, and we use that to track and monitor our progress and of course, work together as a team, celebrate as a team, but also make adjustments to support our students' outcomes. As you know, we'll start with reading. So reading is such a critical skill for our students. We know that developing successful readers in grades 1 to 3, or in the years of 1 to 3, grades 1 to 3, support students' reading to learn, which ultimately impacts all subject areas and students' transition through middle and high school years. Research also draws strong connections to the correlation between our grade 3 reading outcomes and graduation rates. So within GSCS, we're very proud of the work that our teachers have been doing within their very rich, richly diverse classrooms in supporting student growth and, of course, developing that love of the amazing lifelong skill of reading. On this slide, and in the word package, we've highlighted some of the key strategies within the area of focus plan for reading. This slide provides you strategies for the area of reading within the area focus plan that are consistent with four areas, and that's assessment, ensuring that our teachers have access to quality resources, providing intervention when students struggle, and also planning for targeted resources to support our goal of equity and outcomes for our students. A key resource to our work that you can see right here is Saskatchewan Reads. It was developed by a provincial team of teachers in 2015, and this really guides the work that we do in the area of reading. We also continue to support our teachers using this key resource, as we always have new teachers joining us each year. And so we continue that professional learning and job embedded support based on that resource. Schools use, and this is our assessment tool here, schools use one of our assessment tools, I should say. They use a one-on-one reading assessment tool that supports teachers to identify the next steps on the reading continuum for each student. It is a common assessment that supports instruction, intervention, as well as students transitioning from grade to grade. And then each of our schools are provided with core resources to support reading. You can see them here. One of the core resources within elementary is Nelson Literacy. You can see that there. As well as a few years back, we brought together all kindergarten to grade 3 teachers to engage in professional learning that was focused on research-based reading practices, as well as developing a common understanding of the reading continuum from kindergarten all the way to grade 3. It was at that time that we heard loud and clear from our teachers that they needed a resource that would support them in terms of teaching phonics, spelling, and word studies. So this is the newest resource that we have here. Superintendent Van Gool talked about it in the early learning resource as well. And this resource is filling that need for sure at the time. And then we are so excited to be able to provide all of our teachers from grades 1 to 3 and new classrooms, a classroom library. And both classroom libraries include rich reading materials that support access to a variety of texts. So they ensure that our little ones have access to faith-based reading resources in their classroom, as well as books that include First Nations and Métis content. When our little ones struggle, we have our learning assistance teachers, which is right here, providing that focused intervention and supporting our little ones outside the classroom. And they're provided with resources and training and support reading intervention. And most recently, over the past year, we've provided targeted resources to support reading outcomes for Indigenous learners for grades 1 to 3 at St. Francis and St. Mary. This model of support is called wraparound literacy, and we're going to provide you a bit of an overview and highlight of that model shortly. Yeah, I have to say, all of these strategies that you see here on this slide here is really and as well as writing as well, is supported by a very small but mighty team. They do an amazing job. They develop professional development opportunities for our teachers. They model strategies in and outside of the classroom. They support literacy assessment for schools and the division. and they work with professional learning communities in schools, as well as support administrators and instructional leadership in these areas for all the way from grades 1 to 12. Thank you to Coordinator Willie, Consultant Kabelski, and Consultant Bouten. They are truly amazing at what they do. And now I'll just go into a bit of data here in terms of Canadian Achievement Test. Just a quick overview. We have two, of course, our schools and the division use a variety of assessments to support reading outcomes for our students. At the division level specifically, we use the Canadian Achievement Test in grades 4 that you see here and 7. We also use the benchmark assessment system in elementary grades. And so both of these assessments are standardized, which means they're administered in a very standard manner. Teachers obviously use a variety of resources, not just these, but this is a valuable resource for our teachers and our schools as well. So what you see here, this particular assessment is administered as a whole class assessment, where the students are asked to read a passage and then they independently respond to questions, and they use a bubble sheet to enter their answers for multiple choice. So the teacher's role really here is to read the instructions, and then the students begin the assessment independently. So the Canadian norm, like you can see here in the center, is set at 77%. This provides you an overview of our last 5 years. However, just highlighting last year, our grade 4 students were at 67% average to above average, and our grade 7 students were 81% average to above average. The interesting part is always to look at the cohorts, as we always do, and that's if we look at our grade 4 2016 results here. You can see they're going from 70%, and this same cohort in grade 7 last year is right over here, and they're at 81%, which is excellent to see. They grow as they learn with us, and that's an 11% increase for that. The next slide is going to show you our benchmark assessment system. So this is a different type of assessment. It's not a whole class assessment like the other one we just looked at. This is one that is it's a one-on-one assessment. And so the teacher, I should say the student, reads a portion of the level text with the teacher one-on-one. And then the teacher's provided questions to ask the students regarding the text. And the students progress through that level text until the complexity of the text or the questions prove to be too difficult for the students. So we just talk about that as being the Goldilocks analogy of texts for students. So not too easy, not too hard, but just right. The reading data, this was shared with our board last year, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but just taking a look at highlighting our grade 3 report, our grade 3 results, as students in grade 1 to 3 really are on a journey of developing those reading skills. So as you can see, they grow when they learn with us, and by the end of grade 3, our goal is that 80% of students would be at expected level. We continue to, as you can see here, we continue to remain above the province for all grade levels and all areas. We know that there continues to be much work in supporting equity of outcomes. We are committed to this work. We do know the good work that our teachers are doing, though, in terms of supporting growth for student outcomes. When especially we take a look at and we compare the grade 1 over here to the grade 3 here, the growth rate is double when comparing all students here to our First Nations and Métis students here. It's a 12% growth from grades 1 to 3 for all, compared to 24% growth over here. Ultimately, obviously there's much more work to do, but lots to celebrate. Our grade 1 outcomes were above the province and about 8% above the province. Our grade 2 was 2% above the province, and then our grade 3 was 6. So one of the goals that we have worked on in terms of equity is and strategies is around our wraparound literacy that I mentioned earlier. This we're very proud of this in terms of supporting equity outcomes, which is wraparound literacy. And we have that model or had that model last year at St. Francis and St. Mary. And we've now extended it to St. Michael and St. Mark this year. So when we take a look at the model itself, it's a comprehensive model. It started last year with the area of focus team, or planning team, I should say, targeting support for First Nations and Métis student outcomes in grades 1 to 3, knowing that that grade 3 level is closely correlated to graduation. The model ensures that we have two teachers working in the classroom during small group reading instruction, providing the opportunity for every one of our little students to read with their teacher, accessing instruction at their level every single day. So looking at various models of teachers working together, the team approach to action research, collaborative problem solving, and focus on student improvement was critical for success. So each team member brings a lens to improve outcomes for students based on context, culture, and relationships, and no one's the expert in this model. Teachers work side by side in the classroom, supporting one another, ensuring fidelity to research-based practices. So on this slide, you'll see posters that Superintendent Van Gool also showed in terms of two of these. And what they do is support our relational and culture-responsive pedagogy within our schools and division, and have been developed by our team, First Nations, and our division, I should say, First Nations and Métis education team. So our wraparound literacy model supports relational and culturally responsive pedagogy through the foundations of Nakatamahuin means supporting, and that culture of taking care of one another, and Tipe Inusuin, meaning power is shared, and Kise Itamuin, which means making good decisions based on knowledge, experience, research, and decisions based on evidence. The term wraparound itself embraces the foundation of Nakate Mituin, as we all take care of one another, and as students, or as a team of students and teachers supporting each other's growth and learning. Team members meet regularly, and they work together to support culturally appropriate guided reading materials that have been purchased, and learning conversations that support student comprehension, connecting all students to their experience and culture. And the rationale that you see here is really just the identified number of students that are needed there in terms of it being a research based on research in terms of the reading, highlighting the importance of explicit and systematic instruction in terms of phonemic awareness, phonics, and vocabulary. And of course, supporting a reading continuum throughout the year. Just taking a look at the impact that we had, and of course, there was so much momentum going last year, and the staff were excited to see the growth of our students. There was and continues to be a strong sense of team with both in terms of collaboration to support improved outcomes for students. The number one thing that I heard last year, and of course even moving into this year, is that they're so disappointed that they could not actualize the full year and see the success trajectory for students that they were predicting. One of those due to COVID conversations again. And obviously we had to shift to online learning shortly after the March reading assessment was complete. But we are excited to share with you the outcomes from September to March last year. So at the beginning of the year, as you can see here, these are students from grades 1 to 3 at St. Francis. At the beginning of the year, we had 58 students, or 31% at expected level. And by March, that increased by 13%. 49 more students reading at or above grade level. In some cases, that would be the equivalent of 2 classrooms. And this is when we focus only on the grade 3s, knowing that those grades 1 to 3s are really on a journey, obviously focusing on 3s due to the connection to graduation rates. We see an increase of 20%, or 13 more students reading at or above grade level. It's been so exciting to see what the outcomes would have been with a full year of the model. Another way of looking at the last two slides that we just looked at, they really show the data based on an expected benchmark. But another exciting story here about this work is measuring growth. So from September to March in grade 3, our expected growth based on benchmarks is 2 reading levels. What you see here is what we achieved, and that was an average of 4.2 levels of growth from September to March. When we compared that to the same number of students from other schools, they achieved an average of 2.6. So really, when you look at both of those outcomes, it's a success story regardless, because of the fact that they're both above the expected level of growth from September to March. Now, I'm hoping, I have a bad network connection here. It just popped up. So I'm hoping that you can hear me. The next slide is just a very quick video in terms of the work that's being done. So I'm going to try and show it, but Director Chatelain, if it doesn't work very well, I will just maybe let you show that from your screen.
We use the program The Next Step Forward in Guided Reading, and it follows the same lesson pattern, and this helps the students know the routine and know those expectations. She was really had really improved in her writing, and she would go from not wanting to write and fooling around to really enjoying writing and getting to express those thoughts on paper, which was really interesting to see. Constant, like we're constantly looking at the kids. Every 2 weeks we really evaluate them, and every 6 weeks it's a complete turnaround, but it's every day, if not every week, we're talking about how they're doing, how they did in that lesson. Is this book a little bit harder than this book, and what the next step is for them?
I've been doing this for the past couple years, and I've had students come in not knowing the alphabets or letters and sounds, and then towards the end of the year, they're already reading level books, and also I've had students whose reading level has gone up a couple grade levels, and so I feel for my classroom it's really working.
So the wraparound literacy support has helped me in tracking my students' progress, their growth, and their individual needs, whether it be from letter recognition to comprehension, fluency, and accuracy. And it also provides me with a partner to work with every day. And I've seen about 3 students that started in September, which are now at level M, at grade level. And this is with the help from the wraparound literacy support.
So I hope that you enjoyed a quick video about the impact that some of our teachers are experiencing as they are part of the model, as part of the team. But it also gives some insight into what our classrooms look like right now as well. So you saw the personal protective equipment that's being used in the small group instruction this year. I'll transition into writing. And of course, within the area of writing, we've been focusing on supporting professional learning. Our provincially developed rubric that we have been working on. And this work began 2 years ago. And so supporting, focusing on the grade 4, 7, and 9. So I'll quickly show you just some of the strategies, very much the same way you'll see here. We've got provincial rubrics that have been developed for grades 1 to 12. However, within the education sector strategic plan, they are focused on pulling the reports for grades 4, 7, and 9. So with that, we also have core resources again. Our Nelson Literacy supports us in the area of writing, and you can see some quality resources that all of our schools have access to as well. Our targeted resources that support reading go hand in hand with supporting writing as well. And so we have around literacy, but also embeds writing within the literacy block, both in the classroom and focused intervention as well, can make sure that that connection between reading and writing is there. In taking a look at our data for writing, like I said, this isn't new. So just to give a quick and brief overview, this is just focusing on our grade 9 students. But as you can see, within all areas, we are above the provincial outcomes, both for all students and for First Nations and Métis students. But it gives you an idea of that growth we do see from grades 4 to grade 9. And in the area of mathematics, we are also focused on provincially developed rubrics that did engage teachers from across the province in developing those. They did develop the rubrics for grades 1 to 12, and so we are able to use those as well outside of the grade 2, 5, and 8 that's required. And just a quick visual of the rubrics there with the wrong picture, my apologies. These are they look similar, but they're mathematics rubrics, and they focus in the area of number. We also have high-quality resources, including hands-on manipulatives for all of our classrooms, as well as our core resource, Math Makes Sense. And we provide division licenses for grades 1 to 8 for all of our students in the area of math, mathematics, which provides support for students online, inside the classroom, as well as outside, and of course, some books as well. We have intervention for students who struggle in the area of mathematics, so our learning assistance teachers support that as well, using focused intervention in mathematics. And then we have math coaches as well that support our equity outcomes in terms of mathematics for grades 4 to 6. And here's a quick view of our CAT data. It stays relatively consistent, as you can see, over the years.
We lost Terry.
So there, I got kicked out. I must have said something I shouldn't.
Be able to share your screen again? Oh, you're on mute as well, just so you know.
Kate, my apologies. Hoping you can see my screen in about 2 seconds.
Yeah, you got it now.
Okay, great. Thank you. Sorry about that. I don't know what happened. So once again, looking at our Canadian norm being 77%, so we're above the Canadian norm in both grade levels, as well as we've stayed relatively consistent, which is what we'd like to see with standardized assessment. And this was the data that we looked at last year. Just key points, once again, we're above the provincial outcomes in all grade levels, and specifically looking at the grade 8 data here. To leave you with one quick visual around what does it look like now. So if you look at the left-hand side, this was our Fontes and Pinnell word study, teacher professional development for COVID. And due to COVID, I just have to say what an amazing job our team has done to make the shift. As you see here, consultant Bequillin supporting a teacher by modeling a math strategy with her students virtually on Google Meet. Below, you'll see links to what we call Pajama PD. Each of these links support professional development videos that our teachers can access, well, 24/7. And so even in their pajamas, if they so choose. We've invested in the hardware and software to support coordinators and consultants in developing quality PD videos that we know will serve us well past our COVID times. And so in conclusion, I just wanted to make sure that I thank all of our coordinators and consultants. Specifically, in the area of mathematics would be coordinator Selesky, and consultant McQuillan. They do an amazing job, as well as supporting our teachers from grades 1 to 12 in the area of mathematics. But all of our coordinators and consultants who have really shifted their way of providing professional learning. So at this time, I am going to pause for any questions or comments around the improving student learning and achievement report specific to reading, writing, and mathematics.
Thank you, Superintendent Fredette. Trustees, any comments or questions that you'd like to make? That was a very fulsome report. All right, not seeing any or hearing. Thank you both for the very good report. It's always a pleasure to see the professional development that goes on for all of our staff. We know that that is the key to ensuring that all our students have such a good opportunity to learn, but also the statistics. And we continue to move forward doing the best we can for our students. So we really appreciate everything that you and Janice have done. Terry, thank you. Janice, I think you're still on the line, so we appreciate that as well. So, trustees, the recommendation that the Board of Education receive the information as presented in the Student Learning and Achievement Monitoring Report, Early Years, Reading, Writing, Math at Grade Level. I'll need someone to move that.
I so move, Diane.
Thank you. Trustee Beckler is moving, and Trustee Jelinski is seconding that motion. I will call for the negative vote. Hearing none, that motion is carried. So thank you again so much for all the good work. This is what we as trustees are called to do, to monitor and ensure that Exec Council and all of your teams are doing what's best for our children, and the innovative ways that we are proceeding, I think, is just really a testament to the team. So thank you again to Terry and Janice. Trustees, I see, Dana, that you've had the opportunity to join us. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm here. Yes.
Good. All right. We're going to proceed now to 6.5 in the modular classroom application. And so we'll have Superintendent Rivard lead us through that.
Thanks so much, Chair Boyko. In your packages, you would have had the opportunity to read this year's modular classroom report. Although this year's actual enrollment for the academic year didn't see growth, over the past 4 years, we've averaged about 633 students of growth per year. Each year, our facilities team, as well as the principals of each school, review the division priorities, submit them to the ministry. Since the ministry uses rates on a floating scale, utilization rates on a floating scale, we're never quite sure what the cutoff will be. So, for example, last year, the utilization rate was 118% utilized in a school before modular classrooms were allocated. Our schools are well utilized. And currently, 31 out of 50 of our schools are above 90% utilization. Last year, we requested 18 modular classrooms and received 11. And the year previous to that, we requested 17 and received 5. It does seem that every year, the Ministry of Education changes the application process. And one of the changes for this year is that they've limited the request to 2 modular classrooms per facility in a traditional build. And a reminder that our P3 schools have a unique process for modular requests. We have asked this year for an exception to allow us to request 3 for some of our fastest growing P3 schools. As an aside, this will be the last year that our P3 schools have a unique modular request. Next year, they will fall under the traditional modular classroom application. So this year we are requesting 17 modular classrooms, 6 traditional and 11 P3 modulars. You'll see there Holy Family, 2 at 127% utilization, St. Joe's at 2 at 122 utilization rate, Father Vachon, we're requesting 1 at 120% utilization, and Holy Cross, we're requesting 1 at 111% utilization, and I'll get to that in a second. All these schools continue to see growth and expect needing extra space. We know that Holy Cross is not necessarily meeting that 118% from last year. However, we requested a modular move for Holy Cross, knowing that the ministry favors a move over new builds. And we are thinking this will likely give us the best opportunity should they be accepted for a modular this year. The rest of them would be new builds, and new builds being because we do not have the capacity or the inventory within our current modular classroom inventory. All of our P3 school builds are as well, our modulars are new builds, and they're all due to growth. And so currently St. Lorenzo will be requesting 3 at 129% utilization, St. Kateri requesting 3 at 127 utilization, Holy Mary 2 at 122. And just a reminder, these 3 schools that I just mentioned all are currently using breakout spaces as classroom instructional for instructional purposes. And Holy Trinity will be requesting 3, and they are at 126 utilization. Just for the trustees' knowledge, our current modulars at our P3 schools, we have 2 of the 8. 8 would be the capacity at St. Kateri. Lorenzo, we currently have 2 and have a capacity of 10 there. Holy Mary, we currently have 3, and there's a capacity of 6. Holy Trinity has 1, and we currently have a capacity of 6. And Therese currently has no modulars on it and has a capacity of 12. And St. Nicholas has none and has a capacity of 8. So at this point, I would invite any trustees that may have answers regarding or questions regarding the modular classroom report.
Thank you, Superintendent Rivard. Trustees, any comments or questions at this point?
Wayne here. I've got a question in regard to the process of the change for the P3 bills. Is that something that the province has imposed, or was that part of the original plans back in the day?
It was part of the original plan. It's the last year of that original plan.
All right.
Trustee Carrier?
Just wondering, how many portables do we have at St. Joseph's right now?
Oh, I see Ryan's on the line. I think I want to say 9. Am I close?
Close. We have 13. So we had we've added 5 over the last 3 years now.
So we're going to come right up to that highway there or whatever. McCormick?
Attridge?
Like, where are we going with these?
The rest of them are all second. They're all second layer modulars that we're adding, as was the one that we added this year.
When you say second, we're adding a second to the first, or are we adding a first and second?
There's a second story, I should say.
So we're adding these portables are going on top of an existing one story right now.
Takes up no more land space.
Oh, I know that. I'm quite familiar with the two level. So these are, I thought they were all two level already at St. Joseph's, but I guess we got some one level, say level.
They're two level compatible, so they have the capacity to have a second.
I gotcha.
Yeah, the last 5 that were added are all two story compatible.
So we really got to keep our eye on the ball when we talk about these portables going on at both, certainly Holy Family, Holy Cross, and St. Joe's, and the impact that a potential high school in these sectors is going to have. So as we move forward to justify the East Sector High School, what are the politics and the optics of justifying a high school where we got maybe up to 20 already in our high schools? I mean, how are we approaching that? Like, we're not going to deny the portables of St. Joseph's and the Cross, but is it going to lengthen the approval process for East Sector? Because we have facilities now.
Yeah. No, a really good point. I'll just make a couple comments. I think Joel wants to chime in as well. I think what we've done is done the background work on the enrollment, current enrollment and enrollment projections as we can mine back through the feeding schools into that and can present the need very clearly. But they also understand that that's a number of years out before that building would be ready. And so we need interim capacity. So yeah, on one hand, it's making it manageable, but these buildings are, exceeding, will be, according to our numbers, that are, what's manageable in those buildings in the core. So we've got good information around the enrollments. I think that's feeding our case moving forward. But in the meantime, we need support. So I'm not sure, Joel, if that kind of covers what to.
Yeah, it pretty much covers exactly. When we did the business case for the new high school, we didn't just look at utilization, because as you add more relocatables, you meet the utilization requirements because you add more space, but really looked at it from a core perspective. What can the core withstand? You only have one mega large gym at the school. So as you add more and more relocatables, it puts more and more pressure on that one gymnasium. We're not going to be adding a gym anytime soon. So we looked at more what the core was designed for and how many students it can support, and looked at utilization in that way compared to just keep adding relocatables. And that made the argument. And the neighboring school there as well, Centennial would have the same pressures that we are having. So the need is there. It's just when. And that's part of the business case of determining when, because the core can only sustain so much enrollment. That helps.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Okay, trustees, any more questions or comments? Hearing none, the recommendation that the Board of Education approve the School Division's modular classroom application for the 2021-2022 school year. I'll need someone to move that motion. Trustee Zakreski-Rebecki, Trustee Carrier is seconding that motion. All those to the negative? That motion is carried. Thank you, Superintendent Rivard and Director Shatlin and Lloyd for chiming in. And I think all of us appreciate all of those good talking points for us when it comes to in the general public knowing about the utilization rates being able to have that conversation with people when they ask us, why don't you just keep moving to, I like the forestry farm instead of McCormick, that we'd be moving closer there. But Those are always good to have. So thank you for all of those stats. All right, let's proceed to 6.6, the facilities monitoring report. CFO Lloyd, Superintendent Rivard, and Manager Martin.
Thanks so much. I'll just do a quick introduction, Chair Boyko, and then pass it off to Ryan. So I don't think I can repeat this enough times, but we're truly blessed to have the expertise of Ryan as our manager and leader within our facilities department. And for me, what's more impressive than his extensive knowledge of facilities is the way that he works with all of our staff and making sure that our students' families have the best facilities for the simple fact of learning. Learning is at the heart of everything he does. And so with that, I do pass it on to Ryan for the facilities monitoring report.
Thank you, Superintendent Rivard, and thank you for the kind words. I'd like to start off by saying thank you for the opportunity to report on the work completed by our facility services team in the 2019-2020 school year. The drafting of this report allows time to reflect and recognize the contributions of our facilities staff, something that, you know, we may overlook day to day as we carry out our service to the division. This year's report celebrates similar successes to previous years, such as roof replacements, mechanical upgrades, new relocatable classrooms, and all the other improvements made for our students and staff. Given our current world reality, today's report to the board will have a slightly different lens, recognizing our staff who played a role in preparing for the reopening of school in November 2020. There was work to do, and all staff had a role to play. The pause in education specific to in-person learning created challenges for many. It also presented a great opportunity. Throughout the months of April and parts of May, our school-based caretaking teams were able to complete top-to-bottom cleaning and organization of ancillary spaces within our schools. I want to recognize Assistant Manager of Facilities, Mark Bodnarchuk, as well as our school-based leadership and our head caretakers and building operators for the accomplishments during the pause in education, in-person education. Once it became clear that in-person instruction would not resume, our school-based summer cleanup started in mid-May. This was 4 to 6 weeks earlier than a normal start date for summer cleanup. As a result, our caretaking teams were able to finish summer cleanups early and take extended vacations this summer and recharge in advance of the reopening of Saskatchewan schools. Upon return, all head caretakers and building operators developed cleaning and disinfection schedules that were site-specific. Sample schedules were developed and functionally tested at St. Philodomir and Holy Cross. This allowed for best practices to be shared with all caretaking teams. To further support our schools this fall, administration approved the hiring of 5 additional building service helpers and 12 rotational caretakers to provide additional caretaking time in our schools. The feedback from our school administrators has been nothing but appreciative, given the additional work all staff have been called to undertake. There was a great deal of facility modifications that were undertaken to support provincial pandemic protocols. All facilities were surveyed in June to quantify needs, including pandemic-specific signage, bottle filling stations, and door wedges. I would like to thank the team of caretakers, educators, school administrators, and facilities personnel that came together as a committee to define what these needs should look like. 54 additional bottle filling stations were installed over 12 working days in August. I'd like to recognize our maintenance foreman and Richard Wilcox and journey person plumber Paul Krieger for their leadership in completing this work prior to the return of our staff and students. The last item specific to pandemic preparations to touch on is specific to personal protective equipment or PPE. A term more appropriate to a construction site is now commonplace for our school communities and larger community. Recognition is due to several individuals in ensuring the appropriate PPE was sourced, procured, and delivered to all of our school and non-school facilities by mid-August. Laurie Langlois, Manager of Corporate Services, Leanne Chinkaruk, Executive Assistant, Admin Services, and Cheryl Andrews, Facilities Coordinator, worked together to ensure the PPE needs of our division were met. Special recognition to our staff and Michael Hestdorfer and Ryan Bagsick, who made the deliveries to our schools. To say this was a large undertaking is an understatement. Over 224,000 pieces of PPE were delivered to our schools as of this October. This is all a result of the efforts of this team of staff. There is one project to bring to our board's attention that was happening in the background throughout our pandemic planning. This is the creation of our new service center home at 1402 Fletcher Road. And I'd like to recognize our Assistant Manager of Facilities, Phil Rochon, for his leadership on the renovations of our new service center. After 37 years of service, Phil continues to serve our division faithfully. As a result of Phil's leadership, we have successfully started to move into our new home. In some way, shape, or form, all facility staff played a role in making the Fletcher project a success. Whether it was providing feedback on the design or working on site along our external contractors, there was work for everyone. So special recognition to all of our staff in supporting the project to ensure success. There's still much sorting and organizing to be done, but the transition has been smooth. We look forward to a time when we can all gather and officially open our new service center in the right way. And a sincere thanks to our board for making this project a reality. In closing, there's one person that frequently came to mind while drafting this report, and that was Trustee Alice Risling. Each year that this report was brought to our board, Trustee Risling would make a point of personally acknowledging the work of our collective facilities team. This usually came with a chocolate treat or some other form of sweetness. Trustee Risling was the embodiment of a life of service throughout her life, something we should all aspire to in our mission of Catholic education and service to our communities. Thank you, and at this time, I'll pause for any questions specific to the facility monitoring report.
Thank you, Ryan, for that great report. See if any comments or questions that you'd like to make.
Diane, Tim here.
Yes, Tim.
Just again, to Ryan specifically and Francois, thank you for this report. It's very detailed. It was a great reading, and this on top of the monitoring reports for the educational programming, it just, again, affirms the great things going on in our school division and the leadership we have in our administrative team. So I thank you, Ryan, for all you do in your leadership role in facilities. And Francois, I want to acknowledge you, too, for right from the get-go here, acknowledging Ryan at the start of this. So thank you to all of you folks.
Thank you, Trustee Jelinski.
Thank you, Tim. Trustee Carrier?
Are there any other questions specific to his report? I want to digress for one moment. Ryan and Francois, thanks. Yeah, that is very detailed and tremendous. When I drive around in the city, it's extremely reassuring to always see something going on in our schools. Be it windows or parking lots or fencing or roofs. There's always something, and it's gratifying that we're maintaining our buildings as much as possible. Ryan, I'm just going to take the liberty to speak a little bit about a question about Father Robinson, only because thank you very much for sending me those two pictures just now as identified. My question to you is that second picture, which is showing two major outflows of water, which the other trustees haven't seen, and I'm going to ask that you send them the pictures. Those two major outflows, are those supposed to be downspouted down, or are those two failure spots?
That's the result of that water infiltration into the roofing system, Trustee Carrier, and it presenting itself under the eave on top of the masonry, as we spoke about.
Okay. Yeah, so that's really, please have those pictures sent to the trustees so they can see it, after the meeting. But it does certainly justify that there's something major going on there. So thanks for doing that.
No, you're welcome. And looking back, that was one photo I was, it would have probably been appropriate to include as part of the presentation. And it would have just spoke to that detail where I was trying to outline where the water was presenting itself through the exterior wall or the envelope. So I will share that.
Thank you.
All right, trustees, I'm not seeing or hearing any other questions. So So the recommendation that the Board of Education receive the information as presented in the facilities monitoring report. I'll need someone to move that motion. Thank you, Trustee Bibelot. I'll need someone to second that motion. Is that you, Trustee Wayne. Elliott?
Or Wayne?
Trustee Seuss, thank you. I'll call for the negative motion. That motion is carried. And again, Ryan and Francois and Joel, thank you for your incredible work in this capacity. Whenever I see this, and you know, education is education, but everything that goes on to support education, there's always something in me that wants to send this to like the construction industry or to the Chamber of Commerce and the North Saskatchewan Business Association, just to see the work that needs to be done for the upkeep of, I believe, is it 53 or 55 buildings that we have in the divisions? 53. So all the work that the three of you coordinate, we really appreciate all of that. So thank you, and please pass along the board's thanks to all of your team, and we appreciate too you acknowledging Alice in this case as well, Ryan. Thank you. All right, let's proceed now, trustees, to 6.7, the pandemic update. Director Shetlin and Exec Council, is this one standing quiet for at least an hour?
No, never. Never standing quiet, 24/7 work. One more update for the board, as we have been doing since the beginning, to provide the board with any changes or adaptations to our plan and our responses as an organization. Within the body of the report is a link to the overall plan that the return to school plan that we put in place for August, and then have been updating any components as we've gone along. Huge thanks to so many folks within the organization that have supported our plan and our implementation of the adjustments and changes to our operations in order to respond to the needs as the pandemic has presented. So our 14 teams that were contributing to that plan back in June, July, and August continue to operate, and we continue to bring them together as needed as things change and adapt in our operations. Things have, as I have reported before, you know, gone very much according to plan. I think about as well as we could hope. We have seen with now a number of, couple of months of operations, 2.75 actually, that the layers of protection that we have tried to put in place at school level to inhibit transmission at school, by and large, worked very, very well. Of course, we expect, as there are increases in cases within our community, that those come to our buildings, and that those are then, once identified, are addressed by Sask Health. But we are heartened by the layers of protection that we have in place to understand that there is very, very limited transmission happening in any of our buildings, and that would be, I think, across the province. So things are going well in that regard. That being said, we continue to challenge ourselves and our staff to be very vigilant with that work. It is tiring and difficult work, but we need to stay to plan and continue to implement all that that work with fidelity. One main change that isn't reflected in this report, as it came post putting this together, was the new change to masking mandate across the province. As you will have seen now, our masking mandate has been expanded to include our pre-K to 3 classrooms as well. We were operating with a strongly recommended language within that first period of time this year. There was a high degree of compliance from our pre-kindergarten to grade 3 families with masking regardless. But with the mandate, just strengthens that and has again been moved then forward in the organization very well since that announcement came out last week. So that is in play now and in place. Again, the adjustments to SHA process has probably been one of our bigger pieces that we've had to pivot and adjust to, as SHA has been trying to deal with a number of cases and communication and contact tracing, etc. That has been a bit of a moving target, and so our responses and our internal process with that has had to adjust. And as you're well aware now, it is no longer just contact tracing with a positive case. It is the full classroom that is flipped to isolation and online learning for a two-week period once a positive case has been identified, and that is now consistent across pre-K to grade 12 classrooms. The other adjustment that is relatively new is the move of our large high school, 600 plus, to an alternate attendance model. So students, we have about half cohort attending each day. And that has been going on now for staff and students to get used to that rhythm and that cadence of learning. What that does do then when a cohort is, when a case is identified, is it does limit enough to a half of students that are asked to isolate. But it is a challenge certainly for staff and students to adjust to it, and they're doing very well with it. Again, our internal team referenced that already, but they continue to work very hard 7 days a week as cases come available or come to be identified, and the communication that needs to happen as a result of that. We have a very well-oiled machine, but a very busy machine as you're getting updates as well all week around the cases that have been notified. They're working very well. We're continuing to challenge that to see how we can make it more sustainable and workable for everybody involved and to continue to do that work. I did want to just make a quick comment around absences or support or substitute levels. That was certainly a concern of all of us as we started the year. We have worked very hard to put a plan in place relating to our ability to have substitutes in place, and I can report thus far it has worked very well. We have not found ourselves in a position of absence or gaps to this point. And as numbers ramp up though and challenges come forward, we're continuing to monitor that, but thus far things have worked well, and we haven't had to engage too far into our plan of reassigning staff and such. So that's gone well. Again, something we're monitoring closely, but we're pleased with how things have progressed to this stage. And our division health and wellness planning team, under the guidance of Superintendent Baslak, as well as Superintendents Shercliffe and Van Gool, have been working hard to help support that health and wellness support for our staff during this very challenging time. We can have a very important part of our work, and I don't want to overlook that. PPE continues to be a very important part of what we're doing. I just wanted to comment that thanks to, as was referenced in the previous report regarding our support from our facilities and procurement components, that they have done a great job in keeping us supplied. We have not had supply chain issues arising with this, and we are continuing to replenish our supplies. We do need to go out for more masks now, and so we're in that process right now. I'm looking forward to making sure we've got everything in place moving forward. Anyways, in conclusion, this is a very interesting journey that we're on. We're doing, I think, really great work, but it's definitely tiring and challenging work. And so the work to support each other as we do this, I think, is becoming increasingly important. And just a huge thanks goes out to everybody involved for their commitment and dedication to the work of Catholic education in a pandemic. They're remarkably well. So with that, I'll table the report. And if there are any questions from trustees, I'm more than happy to take those.
Thank you, Director Shatner. Trustees, any comments or questions at this point?
Has there been any issue, especially in the high schools, of having the mask situation? What I've been being told by a lot of people is that the young people tend to not feel that they can breathe, so they pull the mask just below their nose, and yet it completely has to be pulled up. Have they noticed? Has anybody been talking about just not following the total protocol in wearing a mask, especially with students?
Thanks for the question. That concern or issue has not come to my attention yet. I'll maybe just ask if Superintendent Rivard or Superintendent Gay have any comments on that.
I don't mind responding to that that question. From the feedback I've gotten from the schools has been that there's been very, very good compliance by the students and good cooperation. I imagine there are examples of what you're describing for sure, but overall, I would say the feedback of the schools has been incredibly good compliance by the students and cooperation.
And what about surface cleaning? Like how many times a day are they like wiping down handles, door handles, and wiping down like tabletops and desktops after every class is finished?
Thanks for that question. There is a detailed protocol for cleaning that was developed back over the summertime and was field tested again at that stage, both in the high school and the elementary, because the protocol will be looking a little different depending on, you know, the ages and kind of the mobility within the building. So I'm not sure, Superintendent Rivard, if you wanted to make comment to that, or if Manager Martin is here, you may also want to chime in on that.
Yeah, no, that was, oh, Ryan can jump in as well, but the protocol was increased to 5 to 6 times.
Okay.
Yeah, and in our high schools, the daytime caretaker, their sole focus is disinfection of high-touch surfaces throughout the day. So that would be for an 8-hour shift.
Yeah, I've had some staff talk to me, and they were just saying how, you know, they're masking and they're being so careful, but the reality is that if somebody has touched a surface and then you've touched a surface and then you touch your face, it doesn't matter how, I mean, it does matter that you're wearing a mask, but touching those surfaces and not, you know, so I was thinking, I think we all just need, especially me, just to be really diligent and cleaning the surface as often as possible as well. Cause I, you know, you tend to think, well, I'm wearing the mask and I'm doing this and I'm doing that, but then I'm still getting infected. So, you know, just touching up on those things is important.
Yeah, very good. So I think another layer is the sanitization, hand sanitization and washing, and expectations that there are around that as an additional layer within that. But yeah, very good points. Thank you.
Trustee Bibelow.
Thank you, Chair Boyko. Superintendent Shalin, I'm just wondering if you could speak to if there has been any allowances for situations where there's kids who experience very, very, very high anxieties. And perhaps the masking, from one reason or another known to them, is something that is maybe a triggering them to an anxiety and where that could be impairing their learning because of that entering into that anxiety, high anxiety state.
Good. Thanks for the question. Certainly within the masking mandate is the opportunity for exemptions within that. And so we've developed, a very supportive process that would that the school team can walk through with the family and the student to identify exactly that type of an issue where medically, you know, that it is very difficult for them. And so being able to have that type of an exemption, but it's not, it needs to be then other layers of protection need to be put in place of that. So from distance to other cleaning mechanisms to masking to, or sorry, face shields to, you know, plexiglass or whatever are the other mitigating factors that have to be in place when that mask is not medically possible for them. But that process, all of our administrators have that and have it available to them. And again, they work with their staff and the families to walk through it to make that identification.
Thank you.
So I guess Superintendent Vasilak, so the health and wellness planning team, are our staff feeling, I know that they are supported, but I guess just is there something you can inform us to as to how this has been working for you and for our staff?
Sure, I can give you a quick update. And yeah, you know, I think our staff are feeling support. It throws feedback. I think our staff are feeling supported. I think part of it is asking how you're doing and looking for ways that we can support even more. For example, we've done 2 surveys with our staff, one in June, and then we did one in, in October. So we have the results from our staff that would give us some direction on what we would do as a committee. And starting this week, one of the pieces, we want to do a check-in with administration. So as our committee, we divided up all the schools. We're phoning the administration. I cued them to a couple of questions, but we want to reach out verbally, not via email, and just say, how's it going? You know, what do you need? What are your staff saying? And I think it's timely right now with where we're at with the number of cases and such. So those have been pieces that have given us some direction. And then there's a lot of various stakeholders involved, and there's a lot of discussion that goes on outside of it. And so we've got some pretty interesting things that are developing that, just to bring to the staff, that to let them know we're thinking of them and that we are – trying to put some smiles on their faces at times when they may need it. So it's been a very good committee, and we will continue this committee post-COVID as well. It was something that we were looking at doing with various stakeholders. So.
All right, trustees, I'm not seeing any other questions or comments. Thank you again to everyone for all the good work that you're doing in this capacity. So the recommendation, trustees, that the Board of Education receive the information as presented in the pandemic update report. I'll need someone to move that motion.
I'll move that motion.
Thank you, Trustee Case. I'll need someone to second that motion. Trustee Beckler, I will call for the negative vote. Hearing none, that vote is carried. So God bless the work that you guys continue to do. All right, Superintendent Basilak, you're going to lead us in the conversations about our QP Locals 2268 and 3770 ratification vote.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Boyko. Exciting news from both of our locals. We continue to have our positive relationship, the working relationship that we have with QP 2268 as well as 3730. We work together on an MOA for each of the groups with their executive, in which they brought to their membership for ratification. Both, I'm happy to report that both locals had ratified the MOA. And so I bring forward to the board opportunity to look at each of the QP locals separately in the motion to ratify the MOA.
Thank you, Superintendent Basilak. Trustees, any comments or questions at this point before I call the question? Seeing none, the recommendation that the Board of Education ratify the Memorandum of Achievement of Agreement achieved between Greater Saskatoon Catholic Schools and QP Local 2268. I'll require someone to move that motion. Trustee Zakreski Rebecki, someone to second that motion.
I'll second that motion.
Thank you, Denver. Trustee Cave, I will call for the negative vote. Hearing and seeing none, that motion is carried. Our second recommendation, that the Board of Education ratify the Memorandum of Agreement achieved between Greater Saskatoon Catholic Schools and QP Local 3730. So I will call someone to move that motion.
I'll move that.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. Was that you, Benita?
Yeah.
Great, thank you. Trustee Elliott is moving that motion. I'll need someone to second that.
I'll second that, Diane.
Thank you, Trustee Burscheid. I'll call for the negative vote. That motion is carried. And again, congratulations to the HR team as well as both of our locals for working in such a good manner. And the respect that's around that table is cannot be spoken to enough, I think. And that allows for us to be able to have some good negotiating and for both of our locals to recognize the value that they bring to this division and to the trustees and to administration to recognize that. So thank you, Superintendent Basilak. All right, trustees. This comes now to our 6.9, our Premier's Board of Education Award, the St. Michael Métis School of Excellence. And so we celebrated that award in such a good way. And so now we'll have Director Chetlin and Superintendent Martel speak to us about it.
Thank you very much. And it is indeed a great celebration that we were able to celebrate over the course of the SSB AGM. Maybe for a quick run through of the award and then the celebration itself, I'll turn it over to Superintendent Martel, who just encapsulate all of that for us.
Thank you, Director Chatlain and Chair Boyko. First off, just let me offer my congratulations to the board on the receipt of the 2020 Premier's Board of Education Award for Innovation and Excellence for the submission Marcy Oma Gichigamian. And as was noted in the presentation at the Fall Assembly, the first, as we know, the first SSBA Premier's Award nomination submitted in an Indigenous language. So we're quite proud of that. The event of the Fall Assembly in the receipt of the award at that time was certainly well received by the guests that were invited to participate. And certainly, I know we all feel the loss of the inability to get together in a large gathering and celebrate as we have in the past with other awards that the board has received. But nonetheless, the school community and the partners felt that it was a due and fitting honor and we're proud to be a part of it. The announcement of the award at the school community, we had done a good job of keeping things under wraps even as they shot the video, but the school community, especially the staff and students, are very pleased with the receipt of the award, and it means a lot in terms of the encouragement for all the efforts that have been put into the Métis School of Excellence over the course of the last number of years. If you were watching the comments in the sidebar during the SSBA event, the partners were also very proud of the accomplishments of the school community. There were many of the partner organizations in attendance, and we've heard lots of well wishes since in terms of the recognition that the board has put towards the school and the primacy of Métis education as a whole within the division. There was fairly good media coverage after the event. You know, we tracked the announcement in various media, and typically after the receipt of a Premier's Award on the part of the board, there's a number of inquiries from other boards and other organizations, especially for site visits. Of course, that won't be possible at this time, but we certainly are prepared to share the knowledge and the experience that we've gathered through Métis Focus School, and especially with some of our language initiatives that we have already been sharing quite widely with other jurisdictions that are interested in like initiatives. In conjunction with the school leadership, we do plan post-COVID, and I know it might be dangerous to say that, but we all believe and are working and praying towards a post-COVID era, that we would have some sort of a traditional Métis-style family and community partner dance or some sort of a celebration. So this is well out into the future, but we're hopeful, and we will have some sort of an in-person celebration as the situation allows. And so we're looking forward at that time to re-engage with our partners and certainly have opportunity for the board as well to thank the partners for their contributions in person at some time. And so with that, I'll just summarize by again offering my congratulations to the board and also the thanks for letting us pursue this particular type of education and community education, and for resourcing generously and appropriately the many components of the Métis School of Excellence. And so with that, I'll pause and invite any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Superintendent Martel. Trustees, any comments or questions that you'd like to make? Trustee Zakreski-Rebecki? Thank you, Chair Boyko. I'm just wondering, Gord, is there perhaps something in the works of, along with our partners and us, putting something in the Saskatoon Star Phoenix regarding this, taking out an ad? It would promote the program, it would promote Catholic education and nurses.
We haven't contemplated that, but at the pleasure of the board, it could certainly work with Derek to have some sort of communication or thank you to the partners, if I'm understanding that correctly.
Yep, that sounds like a good idea.
Diane, further to that.
Yes, Tim?
Picking up what Sharon said, the SSBA issued a press release following the convention and following this award. Was that picked up by anyone?
Was in the paper? But Sharon said she saw it in the paper.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I believe it was. And anticipated some of the inquiries from the media outlets, and some of the language that was present in the media release was replicated in some of the media coverage as well.
Eagle Feather News did a really nice story on it too, that gave some history behind it, so that was also good. All right, not seeing any other questions or concerns, the recommendation that the Board of Education receive the information as presented in the Premier's Board of Education Award for Innovation and Excellence in Education, the St. Michael Métis School of Excellence, Le Saint Michel Apatois Quasessan report. I'll call for someone to move that motion.
I will move that motion.
Thank you, Dana. I'll need someone to second that. Trustee Beckler, I will call for the negative vote. Hearing none, that motion is carried. And Gord, I know that you will carry on to your First Nation, Métis, and Inuit education team, and yourself in particular, for all the excellent work that you've done to get us to this point. The relationship that's been built over the last 10 years has been quite incredible. And as Shirley Eisbister gave you accolades, I think we give you the same thing from our board for the good work you've done. And of course, to everyone on Exec Council and Director Chatelain for their support for this incredible program. And we look forward to what comes next, because there's been such good work done. So congratulations to you as well, and for your particular part in all of this.
Thank you, Chair Boyko.
Okay, trustees, it comes along now to the director's report.
Thank you very much. Just the report's in your package. Just maybe highlight a couple of things. The STM annual meeting corporation was on October 24th. Again, similarly, they had to move everything online. Fortunate not to be able to get that community together. But it was good nonetheless to review their strategic plans and as they embark upon a new five-year plan. Just to highlight as well, their distinguished alumni recipients this year are Mary Dawn Levy Conkin and Richard Lucas. I don't know if you know what Mary, her children attended our schools and was one of my parents who were at St. Catherine when I was there. So it's good to see it for Mary. Local health and education partnerships, just so you are aware that work that we put together in keeping our connection with health and education formally continues, even though the pandemic is happening, and it's changed our work a little bit together, but I think it's been strengthened in many ways as well. So we continue to hang on to make sure that partnership moves forward. We do have each week, or at least bi-weekly, a number of meetings continuing to happen at various levels with various stakeholders. From EMO here in Saskatoon, with SHA, within school divisions, both provincial First Nations directors as well, with Deputy Minister's Office, with LEADS, and many other meetings, as everyone is trying to coordinate and support our responses to pandemic and the implications for our community, our families, our students, and our staff. So again, things are very busy on that front, but the meetings are, I think, have settled into an appropriate level now, and we're able to attend to the new information coming forward and plan and support our responses as a result. So anyhow, the face-to-face meetings aren't a thing right now, and many of the things that we have typically done in our time has been replaced with a lot of this type of meeting, and we appreciate the opportunity with our partners in this regard, but we do look forward to the day when we can get back to some of the other work as well. Again, echo my congratulations to all of our trustees on their election to the board, and particularly our new trustees who are joining our board. And we do need to go through a process now of orientation. Education is one of the most complex sectors out there, with many, many different stakeholders involved in different elements of our work. And so look forward to the opportunity to work over the coming months with our new trustees to help orient them to this work. Process began on November 19th and 20th with some initial orientation sessions. Things have been very busy since that time with two board meetings and the SSBA and everything. So I know I need to get back together with our new trustees and help them through the next stages of that process. So looking forward to that work. Early learning provincial meetings continue to happen, just so you're aware, as well as Joint Operations Committee and working through Humboldt HCI. We have our next HCI meeting coming up December 1st, but administration does continue to meet on an as-needed basis. So with that, just a few points to raise today, or if there are other questions, we're happy to take those.
Thank you, Director Shetland. Trustees, any comments on for Greg? Not seeing any at this point. So let's proceed now to some board activity and linkage. Anything to report? Hearing, seeing none, we'll proceed now to convention reports, and we can speak to that on 8.7 and 8.8. Let's go to our committee partnership reports, our joint operations. Trustee Burscheid and Stoos, anything to report?
Nothing at this point, other than what Greg had just mentioned. We're meeting tomorrow mutually. So we'll have something next meeting.
Thank you, Deb. Wayne, anything to add? Okay, let's proceed to the other in faith and action. Trustees Jelinski and Bidlow.
We're just starting out on this one. We're ascertaining who's on the membership, who's representing the system, the membership for that. And then from there, we'll come up with our meeting date.
Good. Thank you, Trustee Jelinski. Greater Saskatoon Catholic Schools Foundation, Trustees Zakreski-Rebecki and Benita Elliott. At this present time, there's nothing to report. Okay, thank you. The Mamau Kamatwin and Saskatoon Tribal Council, we're just, that's myself as well as Trustee Zakreski-Rebecki and Trustee Case. And so we're just working through getting a meeting together and we'll report at the next meeting. The CUMFI and DSPS Educational Alliance, Trustees Carrier and Deuce and myself. And so we celebrate, of course, the award with everyone for the great program that's happening, and we'll look forward to our next governance report statement. Catherine Catholic School Board Association.
In addition to what was shared at the from the annual general meeting, the board of directors will meet for the first time this new mandate on January the 15th, and of course it'll be a virtual meeting. So following that meeting, I'll have more to report to the board.
Thank you, Trustee Jelinski, and we'll make note that Trustee Jerome Nisgoda from the Yorkton School Division is the new president of the board, and Bruno Trischetter from Weyburn is the new vice president. The Saskatchewan School Boards Association, we had our AGM, our virtual AGM on Wednesday and Thursday this past week. Our executive remains basically the same. There are a few new members, but our president remains Dr. Sean Davidson from Perry South, and the new vice president is Jamie Swiss-Windsor, and she comes to us from the Sask River School Division in Prince Albert. And so the virtual meeting was, I think, well attended, but it was also very well run. The resolutions were put forward and voted on through Election Buddy. So I think we have maybe a new format on the way we'll be delivering all of the voting in the future AGMs, I think. It worked out very well. So education will continue to be supported by our provincial Saskatchewan School Board Association. So that brings us to the end of our meeting. Thank you to all of the trustees for the good work that has happened, as well as executive. I will need to have someone move us out of committee of the whole. Thank you, Trustee Zakreski-Rebecki, and I'll call upon Trustee Gessler to lead us in prayer.
Heavenly Father, as we come to the end of our time together, we thank you for what has been accomplished here today. May the matters discussed serve as a catalyst to move us forward and cause us to advance and see growth in all areas of our lives. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Trustee Beckler. I'll require someone to adjourn the meeting.
I will adjourn the meeting. Or I'll second.
I just need one. Everybody really wants to get on this meeting. Trustee Carrier will adjourn the meeting. Thank you, everyone. You can stay on for a couple.